Hi, and welcome to the Midlife Feast, the podcast for women who are hungry for more in this season of life. I'm your host, Dr. Jen Salib Huber. Come to my table, listen and learn from me, trusted guest experts in women's health, and interviews with women just like you. Each episode brings to the table juicy conversations designed to help you feast on midlife. Today's episode is all about pleasure and connection. In my conversations with women, I often hear, I just don't feel myself anymore. I don't feel connected. It's not that I'm not happy. I just feel like something's missing. Whatever the cause is, because it's not going to be the same for everyone, I can say that women in midlife often feel a distinct lack of pleasure as they settle into their 40s and 50s, which is why I'm so excited for this conversation with Neve Daly. Neve's been teaching yoga since 2004, and she works with women in midlife to help them reconnect with themselves as they enter this season of life. Through her work, which involves teaching teachers and individuals, she also supports the social, mental, and emotional struggles that women often go through and helps them to understand the biochemistry and why they feel so different. Settle in, because this is going to be a great conversation. So I am so excited to welcome Neve today. So Neve, welcome to the Midlife Feast. I am thrilled to have you as a guest on this first season. For anyone who's listening, I just want to tell you a little bit about how Neve and I met and about one of the reasons why I wanted her to talk about this particular topic of pleasure in midlife. So I think like many relationships in the last year and a half, we met online. We met through Instagram, through a shared philosophy of supporting women through perimenopause and menopause and just midlife in general. We've done a couple workshops together. And in our first workshop, one of the things that I learned from you that has really stuck with me was how important it is for women to connect with their need for pleasure as a way of supporting not only their mental health, but their physical health, and about all the ways that we can do that, that I hadn't even really thought about. So I'm really excited for you to share with our listeners how we can do that. So what, tell me about pleasure. Tell me about pleasure in midlife and what it can do for us.
So the first thing is that on a biochemical level, we know that estrogen supports the production of oxytocin and the production of serotonin. And so those feel-good hormones are already going to be deleteriously affected by perimenopause and menopause. So that was the first thing that struck me, was that these hormones that are particularly beneficial for many systems in our body and for our enjoyment of life are affected along with what we know to be affected, estrogen and progesterone. And pleasure obviously is something that we feel when we have an abundance of those hormones, but it is also something that can encourage the release of those hormones. So we can't behave in a certain way that can induce production of estrogen and progesterone, but we can behave in certain ways that induce the production of these feel-good hormones. And being in a pleasurable state or a pleasant state will help the production of these hormones. And certainly anything that is kind of reducing stress, reducing misery, is going to up the potential space for these hormones to be released. So the other part of it, on a non-biological level and on a non-biochemical level, on an experiential level, is that what I was meeting in myself in my early perimenopause, and then as I started to do the work that I'm doing now, I was meeting so many women who were speaking about their bodies so poorly, you know, I hate myself, their bodies and their behavior, and really feeling this sense that women were starting to disconnect from their bodies, which is the beginning of a trauma storage. You know, the way that we deal with trauma is by separating head from body. We can't inhabit this organism anymore. And so if you start your perimenopause journey disassociating from your body, you're going to have a hell of a lot to unpick in the years ahead. So for me, an embodied menopause is one that allows you to sit with the comfort and the discomfort in your body so that you are learning what's going on. You are feeling your way through it moment by moment. But if you do that happen. I just don't think embodiment can happen without pleasure, because we're hardwired as a species to seek pleasure and to avoid pain. And the thing is that that's what makes us successful as a species. That's why we don't eat the disgusting tasting berry or the toxic crap that's been dropped on the floor. It's why we don't put our hands into a fire. We know how to react to those kinds of pains or that displeasure of something that tastes rotten or something. But we don't seem to be very good anymore at pursuing pleasure actively, except sexually. Mm-hmm. And I think that the way that the world has gone is we are now pursuing pain to create gain. And it wasn't long until I got my own new maxim for Instinct Yoga, which is no pleasure, no treasure.
Oh, I love that. Mm. I also love this concept of an embodied menopause, because you absolutely hit the nail on the head with the description of women feeling like they no longer inhabit their bodies, and or that they're living in a body that feels completely unfamiliar, doesn't look the same, doesn't feel the same, doesn't behave the same. And so they're often seeking to get back to where they were. So, you know, they want to get back to what they know and what's familiar, but because they're swimming in what I call this new hormonal soup of midlife, which is, you know, the ingredients have changed, you know, some are back ordered, some have been discontinued. We don't know when, you know, things will ever be the same again, that this pursuit of trying to get back to normal is, you know, a little bit of a futile, you know, kind of exercise in futility. So I really, really love this idea of how can I be embodied and come back to this body and support this space in the here and now. And I love the connection to pleasure, because you're right, it's kind of independent of what's happening with our ovaries. It's something that exists in our brain, regardless of whether we're in menopause. And, you know, we have this opportunity to explore ways to support, you know, what is really this huge shift in how we feel, you know, with some really interesting ways. So can I share a little bit of that one exercise we did in that the workshop together? So Neve led us through this exercise of holding a bolster and leaning into the bolster and hugging the bolster, and really just from a caring, compassionate, you know, taking care of yourself and giving yourself a big hug, and, you know, was talking us through how we would get this release of oxytocin. And I can't tell you the number of women that I have shared that little tip with. And, you know, whether women are in relationships or not, whether they have people to hug or not, just when women feel the need for connection, which is a huge need that we all have and is often an unmet need, that we can actually, you know, we can do that on our own. We don't have to have another person to feel that connection with ourselves. So can you talk a little bit more about how else we can elicit that reaction and support that kind of care?
Oh, it's so lovely. And so many ways that we can do it, which is fab. One of the central things in yoga philosophy is that in the center of our heart, they believe we always have a tiny seed of joy. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of pictured as a little sesame seed. And sometimes that sesame seed is going to be, or that seed of joy is going to be shrouded in, you know, maybe the clouds of difficulty or whatever is going on, or the you know, the unfertile soil of a difficult life phase. And this layer, this seed of joy is also sometimes called the layer of bliss, the bliss layer in yoga. And we have the body layer, the mind layer, we have the intuitive layer, but we also have the bliss layer. And the layers in yoga are seen as things to be got through until you get to enlightenment. But for me, I think just bringing all the layers with us is actually a much more exciting journey. So the trouble is that when we get on a yoga mat, we can often disembody. I think a lot of yogis think they're embodied until they really, truly do an embodied yoga practice, which would be, from my point of view, much more sensual, much more somatic, much more instinctual within the canon of yoga. So what I would do in the first instance is to get yoga students, particularly people who are in that menopausal transition, particularly until they've gotten used to what's going on, that's a very discombobulating time, is to just think about the way in which they place themselves on the mat. The very first thing I'll say to them, okay, lie down on the mat. And everybody lies down on the mat, clunk, 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 here I am lying, ready for my class. And then I get them to come up again and I say, okay, just imagine that you, your hand, your arm, your elbow, every bit of you is like your most beloved niece or nephew. And you're going to place them down in a crib really carefully because they're fast asleep. And just think about, how do I land my hand on the floor? What level of tenderness can I engage for my body as I place it in this gift of a position to lie down on the floor and have someone lead you through some lovely movements? Let's begin it consciously and embodied rather than jumping into what is expected of us. So that would be the first thing, is to kind of slow down and hold ourselves with the kind of care we would a sleeping baby that we loved.
That's all. Like treating ourselves with the same kind of compassion that we give to other people all the time.
Exactly. So, but this is even just bringing it way back from the sentences about compassion, where we might say, I love myself, or I feel okay about myself, or I'm great, or I'm doing fine. This is really basic kind of, you know, pre-verbal almost compassion with which we gently put ourselves on the floor. So it's kind of, I'm trying to get people almost towards a conscious, unconscious treatment of the physical body compassionately. And it's really, it's something that I think most yoga students and teachers don't really notice, is how disembodied they are in their practice, because unfortunately that still has a connection to pain and to pushing and competition with oneself, even just how, you know, how far am I going to get in my yoga practice today? And then there's the whole part that you were talking about the need for connection. And the great thing is that, you know, part of yoga is about community and about creating that social network. And one of the things about oxytocin is that that's a hormone that makes us want to connect. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the key things that I describe to women and people in perimenopause and beyond is that without oxytocin, you might feel much less maternal and much less interested in being in partnership. So you may find that your partner, though you may have loved them all your life, and you're going, why am I feeling so impatient towards this partner? That's because you're lacking the hormone that makes it necessary to have a partner, or that makes the drive to have a partner to help you bring up your offspring. It's also why you're more pissed off with your kids. And you're thinking, seriously, you want me to make any more dinner? I'm not making dinner. You know, I'm just going to eat my own thing and feck off. You can all mind yourselves. Excuse my French. So when women understand that they are lacking a hormone, or that a hormone that they have used and enjoyed for bonding and connection, they get less judgmental about themselves. But the downside is that we do need to stay bonding. We do need to be in social interaction. And so if we just decide, oh, look, it's all part of perimenopause, I don't have to care about anybody anymore, then we can withdraw from the world and we become unable to be social. And there's a great, though, positive cycle between being social and creates a release of the feel-good hormones, but also the feel-good hormones create that desire to be social. So if we can connect with ourselves through hugging that bolster and start to release those feel-good hormones, then we might feel more able to come out in the world.
I love that so, so, so much. I think that that is going to be such an aha moment for anyone who's listening, because I don't know anyone who explains it as beautifully and clearly as you do about why we need that connection and that pleasure. I often talk about pleasure and connection with food when I'm working with women and their relationship with food, because they have separated what they want and like from what they think they should have. And so they're not choosing foods that they enjoy or that they like with permission. They only have those foods if they've given up or given in or feel like they've earned them. And so when I'm, you know, talking to women about how can we reframe your relationship with food so that it's supporting all aspects of your health, including your mental health, I talk about how pleasure is not optional. Like, it is something that we actually need to survive. And, you know, we think about pleasure as being, you know, kind of this thing that we can take or leave, or it's nice to have, but
And it's an indulgence, so we feel guilty, like we're having too much.
Exactly. Like it is, it's not an indulgence at all. And like you said, you know, it is so important because it creates that social connection, you know, and it also, you know, social connection is a big part of health. And it's one of, you know, the pieces of health and the wheel of health that helps people to live longer, healthier lives. So I think that that's so interesting. Have you ever heard of the pleasure deficit of midlife or this U-shaped curve?
Oh, yes. Isn't it that we get to our nadir, our rock bottom around midlife, and then it's all upwards from there, which is great. Great news.
Well, you know, there's a fair amount of controversy. I know that some people think that it's a bunch of bollocks, but, you know, I think I can relate to this idea that the beginning and the ends of life are when people report being happiest, because that's what it is. It's self-reports. And if you think about being in the thick of midlife, whether you have kids, whether you work outside the home, like whatever it is, it tends to be the period of life when we're busiest, when people expect the most of us, when we have a lot of responsibility, either to, you know, children or parents or jobs or pets or whatever it is. So there's a lot that we are giving of ourselves to. And it seems like from the conversations that I have with women, there's less coming in. You know, there's less coming in to our lives as unique and distinct sources of pleasure, whether that's new friendships, new people, new jobs, new hobbies, whatever it is. So, you know, I often, you know, really try and tell women to kind of harness this second act and try and really kind of make it their creative piece, because creating things in midlife seems to be really fulfilling. When you look at the number of women who are entrepreneurs for the first time or, you know, transitioning careers, and just kind of how can we really start to think differently about what we're putting out to the world, but also what we're looking to get back.
Oh yeah, very much. I like that, you know, because I think we're constantly expecting to be productive, and that's what's valued in the world. And it's kind of easy to be productive when you do have all that estrogen going on and that progesterone helping to balance you and keep you kind of sane while you're in that estrogenic high, you know, when you've got that those kind of superhuman, superwoman wings, and the multitasking wings. And then, as you say, we start to come to this place where, for instance, as you began, what you were just saying about kind of making choices, nutrition choices that are not about enjoyment, that are just about how can I fix this or be better at that or look better in this. And it's the same with movement. People are choosing their output that they choose. It's all about trying to fix. And as you were saying before, when you talked just a little bit ago, we're trying to get back to quote unquote normal. And there's two problems there. One is that there is a recovery deficit in midlife, or not in midlife, in postmenopausally, no matter when you encounter menopause, whether it's premature or even a late menopause, that's going to affect your recovery time. It's going to affect your collagen, your cartilage, your fascia, your synovial fluid. And you're going to be finding that you injure more easily. You need more recovery time. You're exhausted more easily. And yet, of course, in order to feel like they're moving back to normal or hanging on to normal, the output choices are exhausting or injuring. And then they find, or they, when I say they, really, we should both be saying we, because I'm sure we both at certain times, because, you know, we're not always all embodied and we're not always all on the right track. Certainly there's been times when I'd like, oh God, I've stopped running. What'll I do? I must start running again. And happily I've kind of let that go. But every now and then on a walk, I'm thinking, must run. No, I'm okay. I need to run. So there's that way in which our output is becoming heftier than our input. And so we're not recovering, and we need to, you know, we don't have sleep in which to recover either, because our sleep might be deleteriously affected. So we're shooting ourselves in the foot in that regard. But we are really shooting ourselves in the foot if we are spending all our time trying to get back to anywhere, because this is a body that is not going to go back to what it was. This is a body on a normal physiological journey of life. The downside of life is that we die, but we don't get to live without dying. So of course, as the years go by, your body isn't going to do what it used to do. But I just find that it makes me mad how we're happy to accept the shape of a baby. We're happy to accept the shape a child is. We're happy to accept the shape a preteen is. We're happy to accept the shape of pregnant women or women in their 20s and 30s. But we just don't seem to be able to see that the shape of a body postmenopausally is acceptable, like even acceptable, Jennifer.
I know.
Let alone okay, you know, let alone wonderful. We can't even get to that point of accepting.
Accepting this whole concept that bodies are meant to change, and really shifting our mindset that change is okay, that it's not a sign that you're doing something wrong or that you're a bad person or that you need to try harder or different or whatever it is. Accepting that change is just part of being human, and separating the value that we have tied to that, I think, is one of the biggest hurdles that all women go through. But maybe especially in midlife, because there definitely is kind of a line in the sand that happens around 40, where even if you feel like you've had control of your body, for the first half of your life, there's something about midlife that really makes you realize that maybe you didn't have control, because maybe control isn't something that you can attach to your body. There are things that start to happen whether you want them to or not. And, you know, what I find so interesting when we talk about, if you ask women, like, what do you find pleasurable? What's enjoyable? Because I have these conversations a lot in the context of emotional eating. You know, emotional eating is often because we're feeling strong feelings, and often it's because we're in this pleasure deficit. There isn't enough in our life that is coming in that's pleasurable, that gives us a little bit of kind of flexibility and resiliency in managing those strong feelings. And if our programming tells us that food is the fastest and best solution to soothing those feelings, that's what our brain does, because it avoids pain and seeks pleasure, and it's very happy to go down its well-worn pathways to get there. So we have to intentionally choose something else and try it on. And so when I ask women, you know, what can you have that is accessible to you on a regular basis that you find pleasurable? They have a really hard time, you know, we sometimes really have to dig deep. So for me, finishing a chapter in a book, having a great cup of tea, making muffins, doing something that I can start and finish in 15 minutes, which sometimes is a load of laundry, which sounds kind of stupid, but there's pleasure in that, right? That I can take from. Is it also a chore? Sure, I get pleasure from checking off things on my to-do list. I can fully admit that. But I also, you know, I think that we need to expand what's pleasurable, because we have this, I think, societal and cultural expectation that something that is pleasurable is going to be like off the charts awesome. And it's these little pleasures that we need to have access to every day to fill that bucket. So I teach that with food, that, you know, you have this opportunity for pleasure and satisfaction so many times a day. Why not take advantage of that? You know, why not allow yourself to enjoy your food? I think this discussion around pleasure is, you know, a much bigger discussion. But what kind of changes do you see in the women that you work with when they're able to access pleasure on a regular basis? How does it change their experience?
Yeah, well, there's a few areas. I mean, I think we can't have this conversation. I do want to talk about the general sense of what changes, but without talking about sexuality and libido and all of that. And I think that when our libido changes and when our vagina changes, we can start to disconnect from that part of our body, because it feels like this sort of alien landscape, and we feel it's not going to perform, quote unquote, the way it used to. In talking to sex therapist colleague of mine, she talks about I suggest to my clients that they look for the embers rather than the big fire, which is exactly what you were saying about simple, smaller pleasures. So that if you are, you may not be feeling orgasmic, you may not feel like self-pleasuring, you may not feel like having sex of any sort with your partner, but if you look for yourself to just even enjoy the little moments where the embers start to glow, whether that turns into anything or not, or you just like move your pelvis a little bit and feel that sensuality. So that in terms of kind of our sexual health or our healthy relationship with our changing vaginal tissue, being able to see it as tissue like any other that loves and needs movement and that loves and needs nourishment. So I try to kind of help people to shift their focus on their libido to, rather than calling it a loss of libido, calling it a change of libido. Because really, if you think about it, it's not a loss unless you're missing it. And if you're not wanting to have sex, then is that actually a loss? Where is the loss? Is the loss from your partner or is it from you? And of course, it's the glue of many people's relationships. So it's important to go and work on that with your partner and talk about those things that, like with food, that are small, simple, and can happen daily, like a foot rub or a little stroke on your skin. But also to notice that, or to be aware that apparently our brain doesn't know the difference between when we stroke our own skin and somebody else strokes it. So offering yourself gentle, sensual touch, and it doesn't have to be anywhere near your genitals. So if I'm in a yoga class, I certainly won't be asking people to touch their genitals, but I might get them to stroke their belly or their face, their cheek really gently. But what I would absolutely do is I would, when we're doing work on the pelvis, there'd be a moment in there where that movement would be sensual and pleasurable. And not many yoga teachers are comfortable with this. The ones I train would say, "Oh God, I could never say that to my students," but I will, which is I would say you're moving your hips, you're moving your vulva, you're moving your bum, you're moving your belly, you're moving your vagina. And I would put those words in there so that people are able to connect on a much more neutral level to their genitals and feel them moving. So that's, for me, that's a really important part of the conversation so that we don't alienate ourselves from our genitals. Even if we're managing to stay in connection with the rest of our body, a lot of women will disconnect from their sex organs. The other thing, you were asking me, what changes do I see? So one of the great things is self-esteem. So I think women come to me thinking they are worth nothing. They've left other yoga classes because the classes have stopped being achievable for them. And they come into me going, "I used to be able to be better than Jennifer here, who can't get her knees to the floor. I used to be able to do that when I was sitting cross-legged, and now I can't." And the first thing is that I take out that equation, that part of the equation where it's about improvement on a linear level. And when I offer them the possibility that this movement could be led by their own desire for pleasure, and I really don't mean sexual pleasure in the yoga class, just literal pleasure of movement, of enjoying something, the little light bulb that goes on that yoga doesn't have to be like the gym, a different version of the gym. So self-esteem help it really gets helped because there's a sense of, "Oh, I can do this. There's something I can do here, and I can do it to a degree that creates just enough effort in my body that it's creating a healing and strengthening response, but I also get to be the boss." So when you're the boss, we lose control of ourselves in perimenopause, or so we feel. We've lost control of estrogen and progesterone or whatever, but we can have control over the choices of how we move rather than only doing them to get to A, B, or C place. The other thing that it really helps with is body image. So that when we're starting to notice pleasure in our tissues, so I would talk about adipose tissue a lot, or superficial fat or fat. So these are three names for the same thing. And I would often talk about how good it feels to squeeze that adipose tissue. It's a very sensual part of our body, how it loves to jiggle. I get them to jiggle their bums, their bellies, their breasts, their bingo wings. I don't know if in Canada you have bingo wings, but that's the bit that hangs down the triceps from the upper arm when it's not flexed, when it's not contracted. And actually, the joy of shaking your flesh is a really sensual experience, which can bring up the feel-good hormones, but shaking is a way of releasing the stress hormones. So I'm offering it to them on kind of scientific level so that I can sneak in the possibility of pleasure. So definitely a mood, it's a mood enhancer, body image, self-esteem, feeling like being with friends again. You know, that's a really important thing that starts to happen, that they just feel a little more confidence. Once that confidence arises, they want to go out and hang out with people and go for a coffee or bring somebody on their walk with them instead of being alone. And that's, as we said at the beginning, really important. But we do know that these feel-good hormones are good for us on other levels. We know that they decrease inflammation, and we know that they decrease our experience of pain. So we may have the same underlying condition, but we don't feel pain so much. They're really anti-inflammatory, and that's really important because we can get a lot of inflammation in perimenopause, as you know, and therefore we got those aching joints. They help us with the bonding. They help with our appetite regulation, actually. And I had a miserable week last week, Jennifer, I'll share with you. Just somehow after a busy day teaching, I just got this little slump of like, really, am I any good at this? And I just had a couple of days where I just felt really bleh. And I found myself one day not eating anything. I had no appetite. And then the next day I couldn't stop eating. And I know that what happened there was that my hormones just went into the floor. My feel-good hormones went into the floor and my appetite just didn't know which way to turn.
Yeah.
So those feel-good hormones can be great for our appetite regulation, great for your brain, for memory.
Yeah.
Don't we need a bit of that? That's for sure. And they, yeah, in general, they're mood inducing and they support sleep.
Yes. Which is, yeah, you know, it's such an important foundation. I feel more embodied just having had this conversation. I really do.
It's great.
I can't imagine anyone who describes all of that as beautifully as you do. Thank you so much for sharing this with our listeners, my listeners. So if people want to work with you, before that though, here's a question that I ask everyone. What do you think is the missing ingredient in midlife?
Glad you asked.
What could you bring to the table?
When you asked me that in advance, I'm so glad you did, because I have about 16. So I'm trying to kind of bring it down to one thing. But I think it's probably a mixture of societal acceptance, which will bring us to the other part, which is befriending ourselves. So I think the missing ingredient is making friends. This is making me a bit teary, actually, saying this, is making friends with your amazing body. This is an extraordinary organism that that takes you through life. And I know from my work, this may seem a little bit graphic for some of your listeners. So listen, or turn your ears away now if you don't like to hear about bodily dissection, anatomical dissection. I've done some CPD, I haven't worked with, that's a ridiculous statement. I've done some training with and some learning from an amazing guy called Gil Headley, who's an integral anatomist. So his job is to dissect bodies who are, you know, been donated to him willingly. And he talks about that when he goes into these bodies, who are usually in much older age, so they're, you know, towards the end, they're at the end of their life, obviously, that even after death, he sees more health than illness inside those bodies. And I think that is an extraordinary thing to keep in mind, that no matter what you're struggling with, there is a myriad going on in your body really, really well. So until I had learnt what I learned from studying, that looking at the human body from the inside, I used to say things like, you know, your beautiful face or your beautiful hand or whatever. But now when I'm teaching, and I will say, let your legs float in the air and have a look at your beautiful feet, or lay your magnificent head on the floor, or put your gorgeous hand on the mat, I mean it with such a deep sense of embodied respect for the human body, and how not just the human body, the animal body, all animal bodies. And so that for me is it. It's learning to befriend this changing body by seeing how extraordinary it is and how well it's doing despite your struggles.
I love that.
I thought you might.
Thank you so much, Niamh. So Niamh, you work with women individually, but and you're also a yoga teacher training other yoga teachers. If people want to work with you, how can they find you? What's the best place?
Thanks so much. So my website is Yinstinct Yoga, Y-I-N-S-T-I-N-C-T. So instinct with a Y, because I'm really interested in the deficit of yin, of that feminine energy. And I'm really interested in the deficit of us going with our instinct. So it's yoga. It's got the structure just like your nutrition work has, but then offering the possibility of intuitive movement, but very much science-based. Yeah. Love and that. I train teachers all over the world, Canada, America, Europe, UK,
Ireland, and I'll have Australia. All of our info in the show notes for anyone who wants to find more info. And also keep an eye out, because Neve and I are cooking up another workshop in the next few months. So keep an eye out for that. Thanks so much, Neve. Have a great day. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. If you have any questions for me or for Neve, you can let me know. The way to contact us is in the show notes. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Midlife Feast. If you liked it, please consider subscribing and leaving a review to help other women find us and feast on midlife. And don't forget to check the show notes for any information and important links you might have missed.